All right. Wonderful.
Pay attention to this. Is this going to be technical?
Call the February 28th, 2007 session of the House Committee on Workforce and Economic Development to order. And I will open up a public hearing on House Joint Memorial 6. Representative Dahlem. Whoops, excuse me. Please stand at ease. If we could have a bill summary, please, Ellen.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Witt. Members of the committee, House Joint Memorial 6 urges Congress to support the establishment of the Ice Age Floods National Geologic Trail and requests that a copy of the memorial be sent to the President, Majority Leader, Speaker, and each member of the Oregon Congressional Delegation. Currently, both houses of our United States Congress are considering identical bills that would establish an Ice Age Floods National Geologic Trail, and the joint memorial declares that the establishment of that trail would benefit local economies and requests congressional support.
Representative Dahlem, good morning.
Thank you, Chairman Witt. And I did not know that I would be testifying until a few minutes ago. This is a particular hobby of mine, and I did bring, by the way, I'm Representative John Dahlem, House District 59, from Mosier to Arlington, Black Butte Ranch to Seneca.
And all points east.
And all the places in between. House Joint Memorial 6 was submitted by Representative Scott Bruin. And since we had the declaration of the Discovery Center as the Ice Age Center of the state, as I told you on the House floor, we have picked up a partner, the End of the Trail Museum, in Senator Devlin's district and Representative Bruin's district. Those two museums are going to put together an Ice Age display. Now, the reason that we were able to simply ask for that designation, and we'll add that museum by amendment to the original bill that you heard here with Ken Karzminski, the reason for the designation of those two museums is because right now the Congress is considering establishing the Ice Age Trail. Washington is a little bit of ahead of us. They have already designated several of their museums. Idaho is a tad ahead of us, and even Montana. And what Congress is looking to do is to establish the trail, establish various museums to do demonstrations, and we want to encourage them to establish this trail. The Great Missoula Floods, which happened some 36 to 60 times, depending upon the geologist that you talk to, had a horrendous impact on the Pacific Northwest. All the way from Montana, if you travel to Missoula, you can see the depth of the lake on the mountainside, Mount Jumbo in Missoula County. The waters there were 1,500 feet deep. When the dam on the Purcell Lobe of the last glacial period broke, it sent sheets of water that we can't comprehend. In fact, when they were looking for floods on Mars, they sent satellites over our portion of the country to get some notion of what kind of marks those huge floods would leave. But anyway, with House Joint Memorial 6, we are asking Congress to pursue this legislation. The reason for it coming to this committee is it presents economic development. It presents economic development all along the Columbia River, but principally in my community, the Dalles and Oregon City. And those two communities are going to partner to put on a demonstration. I'll answer any questions you have. I think it's pretty straightforward. The resolution does what the resolution says, and we're simply asking to be recognized for one of the most catastrophic events our planet has ever seen.
Thank you very much, Representative Dahlem. Representative Holdy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, do we have an idea where this trail goes?
Yes.
Or where it comes from, where it goes? I'm just
kind of
curious.
Trail is kind of a misnomer because the water backs up on the Clark's Fork of the Columbia just just outside of Montana, and the lake itself is as big as the two smaller Great Lakes combined. So if you call it a trail, that's what we're talking about is a learning trail. Not necessarily when I conjure up trail, I think of the Oregon Trail or a trail through the woods. This would stretch all the way from the Montana border down into the Bitterroot Valley, and then out of Idaho. Most of eastern Washington was involved. As the floodwaters broke out of the mountains, fully a third of eastern Washington, the scablands of eastern Washington, were created by this flood. In fact, the rich loam of the northern Willamette Valley literally comes from Washington. I'm considering a bill to tax them for it or charge them rent for keeping it. And as you go up the Willamette Valley, the heavier clay settled in the other end of the valley. And Representative Hovey, we know white earth country. That comes from Washington also. That's the clay settling out. And the Great Flood filled up the entire Willamette Valley, backed up. If we were to live in Portland, there's only a few buildings in Portland that would give us safe harbor from the flood. So trail is kind of a misnomer, other than as you travel along the highway, somewhat similar to what you see on the Lewis and Clark Trail, there would be information signs, directions where to go, where to get further explanation, and we're hoping that the two museums here in Oregon will be highlighted in federal literature and in state literature so that you can travel the trail and it'll be well highlighted.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Please.
I just asked that for, you know.
I just wanted
to let you know that even from my district down in Eugene, there are a couple of Volkswagen-sized boulders that were deposited by the Missoula floods. Clear up at the end of the Willamette Valley. So to illustrate the magnitude of that flood, it's pretty incredible to think about. So I just wanted to throw that in there because I think those boulders deserve to be on that trail.
I would say to each of you that Representative Brunn, who's a good friend and working hand in hand with me on this, should be here to testify. This is his bill, and I'd like you to let him know that I bailed him out and that it's not easy to testify when you don't know anything.
I think we have people do that all the time.
Representative Dahlem, I understand that the wall of water, at least some of the floods, was like 600 feet high, something like that.
It's unimaginable. In fact, when you travel to the east side, it's much more visible. As you come through the gorge on my side of the mountain, you can see ripple marks. In fact, I've driven over them that are, and I want you to think about going to the ocean and seeing the ripple marks when a wave leaves. These are that kind of ripple marks, and they're taller than this building. You can't take it in. It is so huge. We have a good friend of mine farms over three of the ripple marks, and it doesn't occur to you. They're that huge. You can see, in fact, we were out to the Discovery Center, Representative Riley and I with the last session, and as you looked out the window, you can see scrape marks along the gorge where the huge chunks of ice, and that gives you some notion of how deep the water was. My house, where I built, is right on, one of the floods came right at my level. I have round boulders in the garden, and all carried in from eastern Washington. It is fascinating, beyond the scope of our comprehension.
The forces of nature truly are beyond our comprehension. Thank you very much, Representative Dahlem.
Thank you for the opportunity to present. That wasn't bad for 3 minute preparation time.
Did very, very well. Thank you. I'd like to call up. Is it Greg Leo?
Yes, it is. Chairman Witt, members of the committee, my name is Greg Leo, and I'm president of the Friends of Historic Champoug. You might wonder, well, what does Historic Champoug have to do with this glacial ice age trail? Well, we also celebrate the natural history of Oregon. We strongly support this, and we would urge you to pass this out today.
Thank you so very, very much. Any questions from the committee? Not seeing
any. Great. We'll celebrate those rich, deep soils of the Willamette Valley and represent the Holby's glacial erratics all over the valley.
Thank you very, very much.
I've noticed that about you.
That's geologic. I didn't know you knew me.
Is there anyone else from the public who'd like to testify this morning on House Joint Memorial Number 6? Not seeing anyone, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Joint Memorial Number 6 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2472. And I would like to call forward first Representative Crummell, and as he's coming forward, Ellen, if you'd please give a summary of the bill.
Thank you, Chair Witt, members of the committee. House Bill 2472 creates a task force to look at extending the Washington County commuter rail from Wilsonville to Salem.
Good morning, Representative Crummell.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much for allowing me to go ahead and testify on House Bill 2472. For the record, State Representative Jerry Crummell, House District 26, which is Wilsonville, Sherwood, and over to Gaston. We've been going down the tracks of memory lane today, so let me just make a couple of brief comments about the commuter rail project. I was part of the commuter rail project when it first began. A bunch of mayors, myself, Rob Drake, and Lou Ogden from Tualatin, the then mayor of Tigard was there, Jim Griffin, as well as the mayor, then mayor of Sherwood, Walt Hitchcock. And we were standing around in a parking lot talking about the idea of a bullet train from the Portland area to Salem. And then it dawned on us that there were tracks already in place, the Oregon Electric Rail. And so, as mayor, we put together our own little work group and started working on it. Each community committed some dollars to staff it, and then finally Washington County kind of picked it up in about 1994 or so, 94, 95, something like that. And we worked on it, and I was part of the Washington County Rail Steering Committee until 1999, when the mayor of Wilsonville decided that she would rather go ahead and be on the committee herself, and I quite frankly don't blame her. Back then, the project was literally just a dream. And we had some lines on a map, and we were talking about where it would go, and our initial idea was to start it from Beaverton to Wilsonville, and then to eventually have an east-west route that would go from Newburgh to Milwaukee. Now it's more than just a dream. It's actually tracks are being replaced and movers are at work, and I'm proud to announce that this Friday in Wilsonville there will be a groundbreaking ceremony for the new Wilsonville Commuter Rail Station park and ride. But just like House Bill 2742, we had to start somewhere. And I think that having a task force of experts and local movers and shakers to get the job done is a terrific idea. And I commend Representative Greenlicht for bringing this bill forward. It seems like we have spent years plotting and planning and working on ways to pay for everything. And, well, actually, we have spent years plotting and planning and trying to figure out ways that we were going to pay for everything. In the end, what we've been able to do is to secure half of the money. There's about $117 million that it's going to cost to put this project on the ground, about 10% of what it costs to run the same amount of light rail lines. But half of that money, that $117 million, is coming from the federal government. And for two cycles now, we've been in the president's budget, which is very exciting to see that happen. The other half is coming from local and state sources, including the $35 million in lottery-backed bonds that we approved originally, I believe, in 2003. We reauthorized them in 2005, and then I think that the bonds have now been sold, and that's providing some of the money for moving forward. It hasn't always been easy to secure the money, but somehow we've managed, and I would encourage the supporters of the behind this effort to extend the commuter rail to Salem to be patient and persistent. The construction will take about another year and a half, and when it's done, the Washington County Commuter Rail Project will connect four cities along the I-5-217 corridor. It will start in Wilsonville, and it will go through Tualatin and Tigard, and then into Beaverton. And along the Tigard stretch, it will have two stops, one in downtown Tigard and one out by Washington Square. It'll have one stop in Wilsonville where there will be a park and ride, and there will be a stop in Tualatin next to a shopping center that a lot of people use, and hopefully those issues will be resolved soon. And then up to Beaverton, where it will actually connect with the West Side Light Rail project. So a person that needs to get from Wilsonville could actually go all the way to Hillsborough or all the way to downtown Portland by staying on the rail project. They could take commuter rail into Beaverton and then the light rail from one place or the other. By 2020, this project is expected to carry up to 4,000 riders a day. And so, and this isn't the first time, as I mentioned earlier, that this corridor has been used. The Oregon Electric Railway used those tracks, put them in originally from Portland to Salem in the early 1900s, and expanded it to Eugene. And two dozen trains were coming and going to Portland daily. By 1920, Southern Pacific had their own system called the Red Electric, and they were operating 32 trains a day. Both railroads stopped providing passenger service, however, in the 1930s, which is very unfortunate. But, you know, freight doesn't talk back. I come from a railroad family, so, you know, some of these little things get slid into. My father worked in freight. But anyway, I digress. The commuter rail is actually making a comeback across the country, not just light rail, but commuter type of rail. And in fact, federal figures are showing that around 7,000 miles of commuter rail track in the U.S. Today, and they're averaging 270 million trips a year. That compares with about 1,200 miles of track for light rail carrying about 350 million trips a year. So it's very close to the light rail. I understand that we're not only looking at expanding commuter rail in the neighborhoods that we talked about from Wilsonville on down to Salem, which would take it through Newburgh, potentially through Newburgh and Woodburn and St. Paul and some of the other, and Kaiser, but also going as far south as Albany and as far west as McMinnville. And I think eventually having a McMinnville to Milwaukee and Oregon City line would really be a good idea. It seems like the expansion is, and the planning for it is, the next logical step. Thinking about new growth in Aurora and as I mentioned, Newburgh and Kaiser and every place in between. I think those of us that commute to Salem every day from the Portland metro area would find this to be a viable alternative to getting in our cars. And the other thing, you can read a book while you're on your way. The great thing about the commuter rail project in between Wilsonville and Beaverton is that it's about 15 miles, and it will take 27 minutes to get from Wilsonville to Beaverton. You can't beat that on I-5/217. It doesn't happen. The federal government also likes what we're doing here. There were only five rail projects approved for funding by the federal government last year. Two of them were here in Oregon. One of them is the Washington County Commuter Rail Project, and the other one, and I would mention this is the only suburb-to-suburb project in the nation. And the other project is the I-205 light rail project through Clackamas County. I would be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chair. I think this is a terrific bill. I would encourage you. I don't know if there's any amendments that are coming, but the bill looks good to me the way it is, and I would encourage you to take it into a work session and pass it out to the floor.
Thank you very, very much, Representative Crummell. Senator George, late arrival here. Thank you very much for coming this morning. And please, would you tell us about the same rail corridor?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, State Senator Gary George, District 12. My district covers an area from Gaston all the way down to Monroe. So a lot of the discussion that's going on about commuter rail will affect my district greatly. As Representative Kremel just pointed out, a study was done back about 1998 by ODOT on the feasibility of not only connecting the the Wilsonville-Beaverton unit, which is just about to be completed, but also a section that would run from Milwaukee to McMinnville. Now, what's happened, of course, is that we have a corridor called 99W, which is the Newburgh-Dundee area, and, of course, it's a heavily congested area. We've worked on this for years, but let me tell you why I have switched over to the idea that we need to look at alternative transportation. When I first took office, the cost of the Newburgh-Dundee bypass was $50 million. Right now, we're looking at about $500 to $600 million for the Newburgh-Dundee bypass. Environmental disaster, actually, the way it's been moved at this point. And we will still need another $500 million to do the Tualatin to Sherwood connector. So it's a $1 billion-plus price tag in order to relieve that little bit of congestion. What we did is about a year and a half ago, we said, let's take a look again at that rail study. So I keep everything, and I keep videos and everything else. So we went back and looked at it, and we said, you know, we didn't believe it 10 years ago, but we believe it now. And one of the things that's happened, of course, is that the legislature, along with the railroads, have made investments in sections of our rail. And so today, in part of my rail section out there, we have significant improvement in that rail. Long welded rail is out there now. A lot of our 1914 rail has been replaced. So we have only a few sections that need to be completed in order to be able to have not only high quality freight route, but the potential for commuter rail. How many of you have seen the video that we have passed out that talks about the Colorado rail car? It's a Colorado rail car is a manufacturer of the units, the DMUs, that are going to run from Beaverton to Wilsonville. Just recently, one of the city managers took a look at the video that we have of that. It's actually a promotional video of the DMU and said, oh, my goodness, this is exactly what we have been waiting for. And the reason for that statement is that we had, number one, a car that meets all of the EPA standards as far as environmental quality. Number two, we have a car that meets all of the standards for crash protection to run in conjunction with freight rail. In other words, in the past, we've never been able to get a unit that could run on existing rail that, in fact, could have the crash. Oh, thanks. Oh, all right. Oh, here's the picture. Well, hey, how are you? Good to see you. And so this is it. Now, I'm going to get you all a video, and I hope you just move the bill out. We hope to amend the bill, a small amendment in the Senate, which would include the study of the Newburgh section of the rail, Newburgh-McMinnville. Now, one of the things that we have seen as we have gone out and researched and met with the community, there is beginning to develop a significant community buy-in. And from the Grand Ronde tribe, of course, with the casino, and most of you, you know, if you have ever been out there, you make the circle in to go under the underpass, and what do you have right at the edge of the road? A rail. There's an old rail bed that's there. Only a little over 1 mile needed to actually reconnect it. It would need a lot of improvement. But what do we have out there right now? Not only do we have wine country, and many of you heard we were originally calling it the wine tourism train because we felt we would begin with tourism and then eventually move to commuter rail. At that time, we didn't get a very strong buy-in from many folks other than, like, for example, state parks. State Park, with our brand new park, you know, at Grand Ronde and Fort Yamhill Park, along with the expansion of the tribe's new cultural center, and with all of the things that we have to visit in Yamhill County, such as Evergreen Museum and, of course, the wonderful wine country, all of a sudden the believability of this begins to happen. What has also happened is that most folks have understood that a combination of improving of the heavy rail for freight, which benefits all of our users, and let me tell you what we were facing, I have three major union wage job providers out in Yamhill County. All of them were looking at a potential surcharge on their rail freight, which would have been the difference between make it and break. And they literally didn't know if they could survive it. So the improvements that we're going to be making on rail are going to not only save our high-quality jobs, but also give us the capacity and ability to run commuter rail on those same tracks. Because, like, for example, our area is not a lot of freight on the rail. It's running every day, but it's not running at any significant number of hours. That gives you a window in which you can run in the morning and run in the evening and or run on the weekends and have a system that does not there's not a major conflict between the two necessary uses of that rail. So what has happened in our community? We have a volunteer, Matt Simek, and many of you have met him because he's been working the building. As a volunteer, he has secured at this time pledges of $16,500 for the study. Our preliminary study is about $30,000. We believe we're going to get there. But if we can piece that together with this study, then all of a sudden we have a regional view of what could happen, you know, in Western Oregon as far as commuter rail. I tried this morning to go over to the ODOT rail section and take off of the wall a picture, but there were guards there. No, that's a joke. Sorry about that. On the wall in ODOT rail, if any of you have been in there, there is a picture, and what it is, it's a drawing, it's actually a map, and it shows what is planned for, I believe, 2014. It was something that from the past. Guess what's on that picture? All of these connections of commuter rail, they describe it as high-speed commuter rail, including runs going out to Dallas, to Corvallis, you know, and Albany, of course, and the whole Central Valley. So it was an idea that's been around for a long time. But it's an idea, I believe, its time has come. It's time now to recognize that this is believable, particularly with these Colorado rail units that give us the ability to have something that runs EPA clean, noise level 25% of a normal heavy engine pulled car, and, of course, something that is crash-proof, that meets the federal standards for crash resistance. So with that, I'd be happy to take any questions. I would point out before I do that these are powered by Detroit Series 60's engines. I own three of them in trucks. I know the engine. It's a wonderful piece of machinery. And one of the things that's good about it is because of the way that engine is designed, it does produce very, very low levels of pollution. So we have a win on environment, we have a win on crash resistance, and we have the believability that we've made improvements on the rail to this point. So with that, I'll turn it over to my colleague here or answer questions.
Senator George, thank you so very, very much. Certainly whetted my appetite. This sounds like a very exciting project. I'm just wondering if you had... if your schedule would allow you to stay, I'd like to have questions from both of you as a panel, but if you have another appointment, we can ask questions now.
I need to get to committee in a little bit, but I can be here for probably another 15 minutes.
Okay. We're very fortunate to thank you for that. We're very fortunate to have the bill's sponsor with us here this morning, Representative Greenlick. Welcome and good morning. Thank you for this bill, by the way.
Thank you very much. I'm Representative Mitch Greenlick, House District 33, the House District that includes Union Station and the Sunset Transit Mall and a variety of other things, and I'm very happy to be here today. Perhaps we could just ask the assistant to pass that around so they can see that. There's a story they tell about Napoleon, and the story is Napoleon... had this vision about a road, and he saw the way this road needed to look in his mind, and it had the trees all over it, and it was this spectacular kind of thing that he saw the road having. And he called in his arborist, and he said, "I want you to get to work on this. Here's how I see this road coming." And the arborist said, "But Emperor, it'll take 100 years for the road to look like you have in your mind." He paused for a moment and he said, "Then start today." And basically that's what we're talking about. The kind of vision we're talking about, extending the Beaverton to Wilsonville line to Salem and thinking about coming from, although I assume now the tribes have been willing to pay for it to go from the from the casino to...
I'm not committing to them, but I know they have an interest. Because they're facing major competition right now, and they recognize that this, in fact, might be one leg up, and that is to have a very convenient way to get to the casino from downtown Portland and, of course, the West Side area.
But certainly, Newburgh to Oregon City is a feasible way. We should ultimately connect that line with... TriMet, when you think about this, we really are talking about 2018, 2020. I mean, we're here in 2007, and we're talking about a project that will take a long time. And we'll hear some testimony later about what the time frame was to get the Wilsonville to Beaverton line moving. And that was on a faster mm-hmm. time frame than we can imagine now. So what we're talking about right now is something that is in the 2018-2020 period, if we start today. So what I'm urging you is how time critical this project is. We met last year, last session, with a group of people, including representatives of Congresswoman Hooley's office, the Salem-Keizer people, the Washington County people, and for the first time we created some reasonable interest in this project that seemed kind of far-fetched until we actually had everybody together and said, well, maybe we could do that. We have the right-of-way available pretty much from Wilsonville to Salem. And if you can imagine now, as the mayor of Keizer could imagine, Keizer becoming a bedroom community for jobs in southern Washington County, you can imagine the possibility of somebody getting on a train at Keizer, ending up either in Wilsonville or in Tualatinville or in Tigard or in Beaverton, and in Beaverton connecting with the MAX line at the Beaverton Transit Mall across the street from where the terminus is. You can imagine somebody from Salem going to the Portland Airport in perhaps an hour and a half by getting that train, going to Beaverton, and getting the red line from the Beaverton Transit Mall to the Portland Airport. As I drove on Highway 5 this morning, I'm sorry I was a bit late. We had this winter wonderland at my house this morning. It was a postcard beautiful, but a little daunting. As I was driving, we saw in the middle of the road, just south of Wilsonville, a ladder that was sitting in the middle lane, and some cars pulled off. And you can imagine, 10 years from now, that kind of thing is going to create a 10-mile traffic jam on that highway. The capacity is coming up on that highway, and we're not going to be able to build our way out of it over the next decade. And if we want to be able to keep freight movement on I-5, we want to be able to keep passenger movement on I-5, we want to be able to keep the long-distance movement on that road, we're going to have to find some alternatives. And this opportunity we're talking about here is a completely feasible opportunity. At least it's feasible in my mind. And the purpose of this is to make sure. I mean, sometimes things that are exactly obvious to me aren't necessarily obvious to everybody else. So this is totally obvious to me, but what we really need is a study that finds out whether it's obvious to other people and it's feasible. And that's essentially all this bill is proposing. And I would not in any way object to an amendment that added to it the look at the Newburgh or mm-hmm. wherever it would start. Actually, you probably want to make it start a little further west than Newburgh, I would assume. And
right.
And that, again, there's track that we can run that on, and it's completely feasible, and perhaps even in this time frame, although they're both pretty expensive projects. I'll stop there, and I'll be happy to answer any questions that I see. Another one of our colleagues back here. Would I chase off Representative Crummell?
Yes, unfortunately, I should have asked him if his schedule would have allowed him to stay, unfortunately. So my apologies to Representative Crummell. Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Great bill. I being from the southern end of the Willamette Valley, I oftentimes get frustrated coming north and tend to try to leave the north part of the valley as soon as I get there because of the traffic. And I really think this is just a great bill, and I fully support the implementation of
commuter rail system throughout the Willamette Valley. And having said that, you know, Representative Greenlick, you know I have a great interest in our rail service down to the southern end of the valley, and it's exciting to me to see it being talked about coming south, and even the mention of it getting to Corvallis and Eugene, where it wasn't mentioned, but there is a triangle down there between Eugene, Corvallis, and Albany that tends to get very congested, especially in football season. And you know, we have a great university, Intel, Hynix, reasons down there to, if we're thinking long term, that I'm not trying to jump on the train, so to speak, on this one. I don't want to slow down your bill's already left the station, but I hope ODOT and in this study they at least take a look at the potential downstate of connecting the whole Willamette Valley to a commuter system.
Well, you know, I was very much concerned that the heavy rail be kept in the Eugene Seattle thing and the Chichu Caucus, which I generally blow to order with a train whistle when it meets, focused very much on that, and with the help of Representative Olson in the last session, we were able to at least save the existing service. But I was trying to figure out how to get to Medford, for example, for a committee meeting that we were having down in Medford, and when I thought, oh, wouldn't it be great to take Amtrak to Medford? And, you know, I looked at the rail line. Well, of course, Amtrak doesn't go to Medford. It goes east and goes to Klamath Falls and down that way now. I mean, it would seem to me, if we can't use heavy rail, which I think we can, I mean, we need to figure out how to link, say, Ashland to Portland by rail. And it is true that these cars you're seeing here provide some significant advantage, but it would seem to me when we're talking about the kind of distances we're talking about between Ashland, Medford, Grants Pass, Eugene, did I skip anything? I hope not.
Roseburg. Roseburg.
Roseburg, yeah. I mean, there's no real reason why there shouldn't be a legitimate rail service. And my guess is, I don't know for sure, but my guess is there was decent rail service in the 30s in that area, and it simply disappeared. And I-5 probably caused it to disappear. But I think you're right, Representative Holvey. I think we need to be asking the questions, and Kelly Taylor's here. You can ask her those questions about, you know, are we looking at how to connect this state by rail? We also need more convenient east-west service as well. We need more than one a day if we're going to connect
out the gorge.
So there's lots of opportunities. I'm also very much committed to a Portland to Astoria line. I know it's something Senator Johnson's interested in as well, and I see that as there are just all these enormous possibilities.
If I could chime in here, too, one of the things that we have found as we have researched this is that we had opportunities that were missed, and one of them was in 1995 when we were offered a big section of rail, and you're probably representing very familiar with this, and we had a chance to buy it for somewhere between $12 and $15 million, and we didn't. And now we're paying $18 million for a piece of it. So what we're suggesting here is get the studies underway. Let's find out where we are, what resources we have, what net negatives we have, but also take a look. Because heavy rail, the freight rail, does not want us to be on the same track with them. I think today with technology, that shouldn't be a problem. But, of course, you have been, as Jerry, Representative Crummell said, from freight people saying freight doesn't complain. Okay, so there is built within the industry, the freight industry, the idea that we really don't want to bother with this. So I think we may need to, and I believe Kelly will address this, we're going to need to look at alternate routes that may have in fact have been those abandoned rail sections. And if you look at the section that runs from Forest Grove back down to McMinnville that could then tie south to Corvallis, that piece was taken out, and at the time I'm thinking, why are we doing this? Because it was in my district, and why are we taking that out? That would connect, of course, to what is going to be the new West Side light rail. And again, you could then cover the whole west side of the valley into a point at which they could make a run into the airport, you know, or down into downtown Portland. So the potential.
Every time I mention TriMet, Representative Riley's hearings, I hear Forest Grove, Forest Grove.
Did you see the head nodding up and down? So what's happened? My encouragement to move this thing, and I'm going to tell you, with our amendments, we could certainly consider the idea. And Kelly may address that the study's bigger than what we think it is anyway, and the one that she's moving forward. But I need to tell you this. When Kelly was first suggested as being the head of rail, some people were really shocked that I was so enthusiastic about that director being put in that place. And because, you know, she came from DMV, she was a lobbyist in the building. But what happened with Kelly is we spotted a couple of characteristics. Number one, she always tells you the truth. Number two is that she can really be a spark plug to move things. And we saw what Senator Johnson was able to do when we put her in aviation and completely turned an agency around. And you look at the improvements in aviation today that have come out of not only her leadership, but leadership that followed. But today, with Kelly in place, I think we have someone who will have the vision to say, we need to make sure that we do the studies, that we begin to lock down the resources, and then begin to look at funding mechanisms. Technology is now our friend. Many of you are aware that I actually resisted the Wilsonville to Beaverton rail early. That was a mistake. What they did moving it that early was very wise. Now, I don't want to make that same mistake again by not moving now to make sure we're prepared for the rest of the sections, including down to Corvallis and down to, of course, Eugene. So with that, I will be happy to answer questions if there are any.
Thank you. Vice Chair Riley, thank you very much, Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say this is very exciting. This is all very exciting, and whoever takes my seat out where I am in 15 or 20 years can actually live at home and take rail down to work, and that's very exciting. It isn't the time or the distance that the reason that I don't drive; it's because of the traffic, and. This is all very exciting, and everything we can do and anything I can do to help.
If I could answer on that. Yes. I serve on Transportation, Ways and Means, and Director of ODOT was in.
That wasn't a question.
Oh, I know.
Yes, it was. Yeah, it was.
There's an opening. There's an opening.
It was a question, yes.
But I'm going to take advantage. All right. We had the Director of ODOT was in before the committee. And one of the statements that was made is that in the near future, we're looking at an 80% increase in truck traffic on Highway 5. And I asked the question, was any consideration in that number, that's a major increase in just truck traffic, of the NAFTA International Highway from basically the tip of South America to Anchorage, Alaska? And the answer was yes. So we have a lot of things that are going to turn Highway 5 into one gigantic parking lot, and we better be looking at alternatives because these things are moving forward, as you all know. And so with those in mind, it isn't just Oregon. We will become a bottleneck for the whole western third of the nation if we are not able to address these things. This is one piece that may make it work. We now watch the rail run out of Portland, do it 80 miles an hour, 80 to 90 miles an hour. It's amazing to watch the freight going east. There's no reason that freight and commuter rail couldn't be running at similar speeds down the valley.
Tremendous. Additional questions? Gentlemen, I just wanted to... I wanted to ask you the question, do you think that the task force that's proposed in the bill is broad enough? I mean, I'm hearing some additional opportunities, and Representative Greenlick, it's your bill. Do you think that we have adequate coverage here?
In truth, the bill was put in as a marker to make sure this conversation happened, and I think this is a good time if we think we need some amendments on it to expand it and to both expand the scope and to expand the nature of the group that's looking at it. That's perfectly appropriate, it seems to me.
Gentlemen, I think you have a very eager committee here, and I would we will hold off on moving this bill today to allow for perhaps some amendments that would be more inclusive if that's something that you would both desire.
I'd welcome that, yeah. And we could either do it individually working with folks, or if you wanted to create a little work group, we could do it that way. However you want, we can get it for you. And now that LC doesn't have anything else to do, we could probably get another one.
If you two would be willing to, along with perhaps a Representative Crummell, to put a group together and some thought behind what amendments are most appropriate, I would be very appreciative of that.
Great.
And I promise to get you the correct DVD before we meet again.
Okay. Thank you so very, very much.
Well, Gary crippled me up.
Are you okay? Yeah, I'm fine. I'll go back me yet.
Next, I'd like to call up Robert Krebs from the Association of Oregon Rail and Transit Advocates.
Good morning.
Good morning. Chairman Pitts and members of the, or Chairman Witt and members of the committee, I'm here representing the Association of Oregon Rail and Transit Advocates. We support Representative Greenlick's bill, believing that the extension of commuter rail from Wilsonville to Salem would be both desirable and viable. And the commuter rail line will provide additional capacity to the I-5 corridor to compensate for deteriorating traffic flow in the I-5 freeway. Increased traffic in the metropolitan area has required the inner city bus operator between Eugene and Portland to operate 30 minutes earlier on some schedules in order to make their connections in Portland. This is also affecting all traffic entering the metropolitan area. The operation of commuter trains would not be impeded by the deteriorating performance of the freeway. A second item is that commuter rail will provide better access to jobs and business opportunities in the northern Willamette Valley.
Sir, could I interrupt you?
Yes.
Just for a moment, if you wouldn't mind. We've lost our quorum here, so I'm going to gavel us into subcommittee at this point.
Oh, okay.
Please excuse my interruption.
Mm-hmm. Then just continue.
Yes.
Okay. The commuter rail line would provide better access to jobs and business opportunities in the northern Willamette Valley, and it would bring the synergy of the economic impact of the metropolitan area down into the Marion County area. It also will provide an attractive alternative for transportation and expanded access to all regional residents, including senior citizens, disabled travelers, and people who do not wish to or are unable to travel by automobile. There's also a psychological advantage to using passenger rail over the use of buses to move people out of cars. Patronage usually is 3 to 4 times higher for trains than it is for buses in the same corridor. And this is proven out by experience with light rail and with the Willamette Valley Passenger Rail Program. AORTA supports a feasibility study along the lines of the 1992 Oregon Rail Passenger Policy and Plan, which was used to launch the very successful Cascades program between Eugene and Portland. And we also suggest that whatever task force is appointed should also include a representative of the city of Woodburn for the lake between Wilsonville and Salem. And we would also suggest that citizens who regularly use public transportation and identified rail advocates be included as part of the task force so that there's represented outside of the government sector. We feel that commuter rail is a good use of resources since the Wilsonville to Wilsonville to Salem section will probably cost less than adding a lane to I-5 for 2 miles. And so it's a very good investment. Since I prepared this statement, I've heard the statement from representatives and Senator George. I think if you include Yamhill County in this, which is also a good idea, and our organization would support that, you should also include representatives on the task force to represent that area. So that concludes my testimony, and I'm available for questions if you have any.
Thank you, sir. Before we do that, I'll recognize that we've reattained our quorum, and we're back in a full committee. Thank you very much. Questions for Mr. Krebs? Not seeing any this morning. Thank you so very, very much, sir, for coming out and sharing your support for this.
Certainly
appreciate that very much. I know that we have Dennis, and Dennis, I'm sorry, from Washington County, I can't read your last name. Oh, okay, thank you. Yes, thank you very much.
Good morning.
Good morning, welcome.
Thank you. Greetings from Washington County, County Board of Commissioners. The purpose of my being here today is to, one, support the bill, and I was happy to hear that there's going to be amendments, because I was going to have a disclaimer that I've got. I would be in an awkward position if I did not support looking at commuter rail and going to jurisdictions in Washington County. So the other... I've got three other purposes. One is that I'm providing you with some information, basic financial information on the Washington County Commuter Rail Project that will be instructive for the committee, and I think also for those that are looking at doing another one or other ones. The time frame is also included in that. And you will note at the top of the page, and it's two-sided, by the way, I printed on both sides. On the front side is the financial and the time frame, and the back side is lessons learned, and I'll get to that next. But let me just dwell on the lessons, on the time frame. We started in 95, and you can see how long it took to get through the process. And I will speak to that, you know, what does it take to get through the process, but I would suggest that probably the most fundamental thing is that you've got to have a community that wants to work together, because when it's going to take that much time to get through, that spans different elections, if you will. So you'll have different elected peoples being involved in leading this thing all the way through. And that's where that gives you your staying power if it's anchored in the community, because they remember what they started on and the vision. Now let me, if you will, flip to the other side, to the back side of that, and some lessons learned. And I put there's five of them on there, and I've added two more on the way down. I was thinking about it, and these are not ranked, but let me. Speak to each one of them individually here fairly quickly. Federal funds. If you're going to pursue federal funds for the project, be prepared to have a close examination. They are tough. They're very tough. And they're the last one to put money on the table. So you're in the awkward position that you've put local money on the table, you've put state money on the table, and then they're going to take their sweet time deciding whether or not they think there's the cost-benefit works. Well, you're already starting to buy right-of-way, buy equipment, getting contracts lined up, and you got the cost of money running against you. So you get in a pinch towards the end. And that's where the community has to hang together on it to get it. Over the hump, as it were. Washington County, looking back on it, we still think the best choice for us was to go after the federal funds, too. But I wanted to mark that as something that you want to look at very closely. In other words, if you've got a short line and you can take care of it with federal or with the state and local monies, you can get it done fairly quickly, too. You will lock time off of it, and you probably won't pay as much because of the cost of money at the end of the project because of that close examination. They do a cost benefit that is has great rigor in it. Railroads. Because you're running freight and passenger, you've got a permanent relationship going with the railroads, and you ought to approach it as such. In other words, get to know them soon in the process and get to know them very well. Treat them as a partner and work with them through this. They've got some definite opinions. They know how to run a railroad, and it'll take some time to work through that. We found them to be, in the end, probably the toughest bargainers, and they do have property rights involved here on this sort of thing. So you need to be, like I said, careful with that one, get to them soon, and plan on making that a permanent relationship. Operating entity. You need to, early on, focus on who's going to operate this thing. Interesting, Washington County for a while, probably a year, maybe 2 years, we were thinking about running it ourselves until we got deep enough into it and said, we don't know what we're doing here. We teamed up with TriMed. That was the best thing we ever did. And they are, if were it not for them, we wouldn't have put it up over, through the federal process. They were superb partners and continue to be. And they will end up running that for us, the region, and the state, ultimately. Partners, you heard the legislators here this morning. Going back to some of them being former elected officials at the local level being involved, we have had a steering committee of all of the jurisdictions in Washington County that help. We meet regularly, talk to them about it. That's where you take the cost overruns to and say, well, look, it's moved a little bit, but we still think it works, and they bless it, and you move on. You've got to have that. They're also the ones that will sign letters when you've come to the state of Oregon seeking money. One of the things that we did early on at the local level is that we put our local match on the table first, and that was one of the best things we did. We put $25 million up and said, ours is on the table, we're in. That does hold people's attention when you're going to the state of Oregon, which gave us $35 million. And then for three legislative sessions, held on to that money and didn't, kept it dedicated to the commuter rail project while we were talking to the federal government. I would submit that if that our money was on the table, helped them feel assured, the legislature at the time feel assured that this was something that had some staying power. And that also, interestingly enough, I think it holds the locals. They've got money in, and they're not going to withdraw it. So that's a very important gesture. Two more things, and then I'll be done here. And I've already alluded to it, and that is that it takes longer than you think, but it's not too late if you start now. And I think Representative Greenlick has already told a story about Napoleon on it. Same thing. It takes a while. And I think, let me just close with saying that it gets thin at times during the process, and that's when it counts to have your partners, and in the end, that's what keeps the momentum going, because you do change leadership at the local level, the state level, federal level. Sometimes that changes too. So with that, I'll stand for questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mullahill. Yeah, I'd like to recognize that Representative Greenlick is leaving the room here now, and want to thank him for his leadership on this bill. Questions or comments from the committee? Representative Gerard.
Thank you, Chairman. The question I have, I like all your figures, and it kind of cleared things up for me about the fact that it's the state lottery that's it's through a bond and the feds. But my recollection of any mass transit is when it operates and operating funds, usually they tend to operate pretty heftily in the red. Who tends to pick up that tab?
Let me put a caveat on it here. I'm not an engineer, and you'll get it past my point, but I can answer that one, I think, is that you'll get a fare box that'll pay for probably around 25%. For this particular one, it'll be a payroll tax that'll help in the operations of it. And that's the combination. What we learned along the way is that none of the successful rail lines operate without having government put money into it rather than putting it into pavement. I mean, it's a conscious choice. There's an economy there over the long run that you're moving more people for less money. So it's the time horizon you look at on the economics.
Additional questions or comments? Yes, Representative Holby.
Follow up, please. Thank you. You mentioned a payroll tax. Is that a county-wide tax that each county that is going to be served by the rail line would pay?
Correct, and it's authorized by the legislature.
One more question, Mr. Chair.
Please.
Also in your lessons learned, I guess, down along the way a ways, you say operate along Union Pacific Railroad tracks. Was that just specifically for this connection that you're talking about, or is that some sort of intrinsic value in doing that?
No, it's just to describe that's where it's operating along that line. I was trying to stick something in there to give you a feel for that it's, you know, where it's at and who else is involved. When I was mentioning the railroads, you've got the one, you know, the one type of railroad, which is the ones that's going to be, you're using most of their line, but the UP is a major factor there, too. So we ended up having two agreements with railroads on the end.
Thank you.
Representative Jerome.
Thank you, Chairman. To follow up on Representative Holby's line of questioning, the payroll tax you said was countywide. I'd like to know the accuracy of that, because I represent rural Marion County, which really won't benefit from that. The people up in Idana aren't exactly going to have a tremendous amount of access to this rail, and so is it a countywide payroll tax, or is it just going to be localized to the area that it serves?
And actually, I've just realized I haven't been as formal, so I probably need some chairman with Representative Gerard. It's tri-county, and it'll
tri-county.
Right. So it's whoever, you know, the people in that region are benefiting. If you're taking cars off the road, then the folks that are coming from the hinterlands of those counties have more room on the road, because some folks are riding the commuter rail. I mean, it benefits ultimately is the as part of the thinking and the logic behind it.
Chairman,
please.
I know that the way it is now is served by the tri-county areas, but if you're going to take it and extend it to Salem and go through Marion County, again, the problem I might have with being a payroll tax is certain parts of my district, as we have brought out before, two cars on the road at the same time is a traffic jam in parts of my district. So, congestion isn't a problem out where most of my district is. I have 10 really small cities, and the legislature still has to figure it out where I live, because I live in such a small one. So I'm trying to figure out the benefit for rural Marion County if they were to be taxed.
Chair with Representative Garrard.
You have to find a way to pay for the operations, and you can take it from whatever source you want, and we ended up going with the payroll tax. And at the time, you know, there's other things that happen in the legislative process that we get what we want, other areas get what they want. So there was benefits to be gained on all sides. That's how these sorts of things work out. And it may not be the best way to do it. That's why this task force needs to sit down, be created, and start working on it. But you do need to come up with a way to operate it in the end, because the fare box isn't going to pay for all of it.
Anything else?
Yes, Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question may already have been asked, but I'm wondering why we don't have a member from Lane County for the future extension.
Chair Witt, Representative Barnhart, Washington County would think that you ought to put as many representatives on there as there are areas that are interested in doing it, and I think the chair can share with you how many other counties were represented earlier today that wanted to be amended into the bill. So there's a line.
Thank you very much.
We have a relating clause that other people would like to join in this task force, Representative Barnhart. So, Representative Dahlem.
I have one question, and that is that President Barnhart and I were just talking. I don't know that this needs a referral to Ways and Means. I don't know that it doesn't, but I would like to at least know that the co-chairs are aware. I'm sure the co-chair from Canby is all excited about this, but I would like to know that he is aware of this and has taken into account this money as well as all the other money he has to take care of. So that would be a question I would have.
Thank you very much, Representative Dahl. An important point to consider. With that, thank you so very much, Mr. Mulhill. I appreciate your testimony, and I think you made some points that will be important for the task force's consideration. Greg Leo, please.
Chair Witt, members of the committee, Greg Leo for the City of Wilsonville. We strongly support this measure. We like the task force. We are pleased to participate on it. We think adding additional jurisdictions is a great idea. I-5 is almost at capacity. You've all probably been stuck in our traffic jam. This helps find a solution. And so we urge a due pass today.
Thank you very much. Questions from the committee?
Thank you.
Not seeing any. Thank you very much for lending your support.
Thanks so much.
Last person on the sign-up sheet is John Charles. Good morning, sir.
Thank you for adding my name to the list, Mr. Chairman. For the record, John Charles, president of Cascade Policy Institute, which is a free market research center in Portland.
Welcome.
And thank you. As a former rail commuter from New Jersey into New York City for 3 years in the early part of my career, I totally get people's interest in rail transit. And I've also ridden the MAX system in Portland probably 15,000 times or more. So compared to most people, I've gone to fairly extraordinary lengths in my life to adjust my lifestyle to have trains work for me as a commuter. And certainly going from New Jersey to New York City, compared to the other options, it was a very good way to get to work for the 3 years that I did it. But I think no one's inventing any more New York cities, and there's a reason, because society is generally decentralizing. And there's a number of problems with this bill, but one of which is that the demographics of Marion County, Lane County, Multnomah, Washington, Clackamas County, they don't lend themselves well to what you need to do to make trains work, which is you need to have lots of density so that when you get off the train, as I used to do in New York City, you have tens of thousands of well-paying jobs that you can walk to. And for instance, the commuter rail line currently being built in Washington County, I can hardly think of a less inviting place to get off than Beaverton Transit Center. I'm totally puzzled. Why would anybody go there when you get off? Where are you going to go to next? And so I just kind of point out a couple cautionary notes with this bill, one of which is the way the bill is structured in Section 2, 2A and B, that points out what you're supposed to actually do. It's all about commuter rail, and it says to generate interest in the task is generate interest in activity in extending the commuter rail line. Well, you don't even know anything about the feasibility of this, so first of all, why would you be generating interest about something you don't know much about? And second, why only rail? Why not other modes? I mean, Wilsonville already runs System Smart. I believe they run an express bus line from Wilsonville to Salem. At least I see a bus that says that around Wilsonville frequently. Now, I don't know that much about it, but I think it would be very fruitful to call the people in who run it and ask them some questions about the capital costs of the bus and the operating costs and consumer demand and flexibility and things you'd want to know. Just, well, we already have this experience going back and forth. A municipality does. I think it's free. It's paid for free to consumers, users. It's a payroll tax-funded system. So rubber tire, road-based transit here, using a ubiquitous road system already built and mostly paid for by other motorists, very low capital costs. Compare that with rail. It seems like the task force would want to have that conversation. But nothing in this bill that I see suggests that the people in the task force would even be allowed to have that conversation unless they sort of went outside the mission, because it's all about commuter rail. So I think if you want to go down this road and have a task force, you ought to suggest that one of the tasks of the force be to assess rail versus other potential options in terms of cost effectiveness, consumer interest, etc. Another problem is that the estimates of ridership and money for these things tend to be extremely unreliable. And I printed here, I went back through my file yesterday. I've kept a hard copy file on commuter rail for the last 10 years, which at least reassures me that Google has not digitized the entire world yet. Because I have some things that you can't find on the internet, and I was looking back, and if you track over time, you see that the ridership estimates for the commuter rail line and the cost estimates constantly fluctuated. And in the end, the ridership was so low that the FTA didn't even want to fund it. I mean, basically, Senator Smith saved it through earmarking, a popular pastime in Congress. But FTA, which loves to fund projects, didn't even want to fund the project because it's estimated to be such basically a loser, and I predict that it will be a white elephant project. As much as I would like to see it succeed, the problem is, despite the fact that I personally like trains, most people, in fact, most people in Oregon, in the abstract, would say, commuter rail, great. It's just that they personally cannot make their lives work day to day to get, because they're going from many places to many places. Trains go from just a very fixed corridor. So I think it's unlikely to be successful given that Oregon continues to decentralize. And finally, I've heard a lot of talk this morning about relieving congestion. There's no possible way, even in theory, that this line will relieve I-5 congestion. It's commuter rail by its nature is a few hours in the morning, a few hours in the evening, and traffic on I-5 is heavy many times of the day. The amount of people you're talking about who would use it, or the 217 line being built, the number of people relative to the number of motorists, is the fraction is so tiny, it will have no difference. And then if you have the density that you need for rail, like in the New York metropolitan area where there's lots of rail, you still have a congestion nightmare, precisely because you have so much density. You have density that allows you to run trains, but then you still have a lot of people in the highway. So if you want to solve congestion, which I do, there are other techniques, but they have nothing to do with building commuter rail. So, I mean, theoretically, I don't oppose creating a task force. If you want to study something, you can study lots of things. I just think if you're going to do it, you should instruct them to ask the question that you always have to ask in one of these exercises, which is rail compared to what? because the numbers themselves don't mean anything by themselves. They only mean something relative to the opportunity cost of money being invested, and that money is not going to come from the actual users. They're going to pay a tiny, tiny fraction. You're going to have a tiny number of people who want to get subsidized by everybody else. So you have to say rail compared to what? If you put that in the mission, well, then the task force, that might be an interesting exercise. So.
Thank you very much, Mr. Charles. Representative Gerard.
Thank you, Chair Witt. I watch a lot of futuristic programs and read Omni and these futuristic magazines. Have you come across anything about smart cars and about... do you even know what I'm talking about? And let me just for the committee. A smart car is a computer car that's driven so that, for example, you could drive within a couple inches of the bumper of the car in front of you, and there'd be long trains of cars going, and you just type in where you want to go, and that's what they're thinking the future is going to be like for driving, which our highways then could absorb a tremendous amount of more capacity. And so the question would be, maybe instead of doing light rail, maybe we could be looking at the future and trying to invest in getting our roads ready for smart car technology.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gerard, I am aware of that. I personally have never figured out how to solve the liability issue. That is, if you're going at 70 miles per hour, 1 foot away from the other person, inevitably, at some point in time, the system collapses and you have hundreds of cars smashing into each other. Who's actually going to take the liability for that? But, you know, maybe someone will solve that, and technology is a great thing, and I wouldn't put... Apparently, Toyota or somebody is selling cars now that park themselves. That's pretty astounding. So, if that happens, great. If you could maximize the throughput then of existing roads, fine. That's one of many things that could happen.
Vice Chair Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things that I have discovered in being involved in many, many projects is that when you broaden the scope of a project, you certainly extend the length of time that it takes, and you almost never finish if you broaden it too much. And so to say that we need to include other modes of transportation, when I believe, frankly, that we have already done those pieces of the study. You may not have seen them, I don't know, but those pieces have already been done, and there's been some some consensus that this rail is really needed, and this project, this group, is simply to complete that study, complete that project, and to broaden it, it will just kill it. And if that's what you have in mind, that's fine. If you want to kill the project, then your ideas are perfect. But I would submit that that's not a good thing for us to do. But thank you for your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Riley, you're correct that I'm not aware that comparative analysis has been done. And if it has, and if the authors of the bill are prepared to make a statement in the preamble that they already know these other options are not cost-effective or feasible, it would certainly help the rest of the world reading this to know that that analysis has been done. I'm just not aware that it has been done.
Representative Holden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I might suggest that, your concerns, I believe, are addressed in this bill. You say nowhere in this bill does it talk about the need for this project as opposed to something else. And I just on page 2 on line 8, it simply says the task force may research the need for an extension of the Washington County commuter rail. And so that piece is in the bill, research the need for the extension of the rail system. And so, you know, notwithstanding some of the studies that are already be done, that have already been done, that might be brought in to verify that need, it seems to me that this task force is looking at your concerns. So, I appreciate your testimony too, and always it's good to have somebody to doubt
the wisdom of any action that we take, but certainly the goal of making a better transportation system is in the interest of Oregon, and I believe the bill should go forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Polvey. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to change the topic just a little bit. At one point in your testimony, you indicated that there are other ways of dealing with congestion, light rail not being one of them. I suspect you are probably thinking about issues having to do with city planning and land use planning layout, but I may be wrong. What are you thinking about?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Barnhart, Oregon has also invested quite a bit of time, money, and effort in land use planning. That also is not an answer. The congestion is caused by a lack of market-based pricing. You have a mismatch between supply and demand, and because we use a gas tax or property taxes or other ways to finance roads, once you pay those, if you buy gas at midnight, at 6 a.m. the next day, you have the same incentive as everyone else to, it's kind of like rushing to a vacuum. The road is perceived to be free. Of course, it's not free. So congestion is specific to time of day, location, and direction of travel, but a gas tax is not. It's generic. So you have too much demand because the supply at the margin, the cost is zero. And you can imagine if we paid for food through a property tax and you went to Safeway or New Seasons and the cost was zero at the margin, it would be utter chaos in the store, which is why we don't, a reason we don't do it that way. So the only solution to congestion, if that's your primary concern, is to begin moving away from gas tax, even repealing it or reducing it, and converting at least the high-value roads, the interstates, to electronic toll roads with peak-hour pricing. And now that that's being done actually all over the world, this used to be considered a radical idea, but it's become quite mainstream, and the current federal administration is dying for local jurisdictions to experiment with it and would give us a lot of money if we had the vision to try. In a place like Portland, you wouldn't do this in rural areas, but in a place where demand is high and supply is limited, peak-hour pricing is the only way to have supply and demand even out, and it also is a way for the motorists to vote with their money each day as to where the next road expansion should be, when it should be expanded, and who's willing to pay for it. So it becomes self-financing. And in places where that already is in use, such as in California, for over a 10-year period, it's been quite successful. So I recognize that's a hard sell in a state like Oregon, but I'm just saying, if that's a concern and you actually want to solve the problem, from an economic standpoint, that is the only way, actually, to solve the problem.
Thank you. Provocative answer I wasn't expecting, but it's useful to hear.
Thank you.
I'd suggest that solution does come with some significant economic opportunity costs for folks who do not have available to them options on when they schedule themselves for work. So around the margins, those who can in fact select what time they choose to travel, perhaps outside of work, I would agree with you, it could have significant impact. Representative Holby.
Well, just thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one more thing with peak hour pricing. It does sound somewhat innovative, and it seems to me that that would be very similar to having a carbon tax as well. So I'm curious, would you support a carbon tax to try to control congestion and get people to use more efficient modes of transportation?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holvey, a carbon tax has some appeal for some things, but it's the same problem with the gas tax. If you were to double the state gas tax, well, the gas tax is already somewhat regressive. It's a sales tax. But for many people, for off-peak users, charging them for a problem that is peaking, that's also regressive. And so if you have something like the SR-91 project in California that has 14 different prices, ranging from about, it's for a 10-mile expressway, from about $1.25 at the off-peak to probably $8 at the peak, people pay very precisely for what they want. What they get in return is they get to go 68 miles per hour 24/7. That's what they're buying, reliability. It's progressive. It's used by people of all income brackets. And the trouble with a carbon tax or a gas tax or a property tax or a tire tax or something generic is, again, congestion is very specific to time of day, a corridor, and a direction of travel. if you want to solve the congestion, then the price has to be kind of like matinee movie pricing, off-season pricing in resorts, even sports now. Pro sports teams are using higher rates for good teams and lower rates. You have to have something that's very specific because people who pay, they want something in return, and what you're selling is speed.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. It sounds to me, based sort of keying off of the question already asked by Representative Holvey, that a better metaphor, a better analogy with the proposal that you've made would be a surcharge on peak power use rather than a carbon tax itself, because it would reduce the need for additional capacity, which of course is the highest marginal cost capacity, mm-hmm. and also tends to be the dirtiest.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Barnhart, that's exactly right. Utilities, telephone companies have been doing this for years. And for my personally, as a PGE customer, I am on a time of day pricing regime. So Sunday is my cheap day, and Sunday is when I do laundry and a lot of other things because that's my cheapest time. When lots of people respond to that, then at the margin of the next power increment, it goes down. Your point is exactly well taken. And everywhere in the economy where you allow that to function, that's what people do to keep supply and demand in equilibrium. And the trouble with transportation, at least in Oregon, is mostly the pricing is not transparent. You have no way of knowing at the pump whether what you're paying, how much goes to Exxon, how much goes to the state gas tax, how much goes to federal, how much goes to a county, a city. Almost nobody would know that. Why would they know that unless you're a total insider? And even if you knew that, it doesn't affect your decision at the peak period because the price is generic. It's not time specific.
So if I could follow up.
Please.
Your theory, it sounds to me as though what you're suggesting, sort of in an overarching way, is that government should be involved as a regulator in a way that presents consumers with rational choices that coincide with real-world situations.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman.
But I may not have said that quite
Representative
right.
Barnhart, no, I think you said it quite eloquently. And so let me back up just a minute by saying in 2001 you passed a bill that created the Oregon Road User Fee Task Force, and I was appointed to it, and I've been on it for the last 5 years or so. And we looked at about 50 different ways to finance roads, and we concluded ultimately that the solution long-term for Oregon would be to begin to ratchet down the gas tax. It's kind of interesting. Oregon was the first state to ever adopt a gas tax. Maybe we could be the first state to begin to repeal it or ratchet it down and use it for local roads and gradually begin to convert the limit that access highways into completely self-sustaining electronic toll roads with peak period pricing where it is appropriate. As you move to cars and trucks that begin to be fueled on something other than gasoline, actually you're going to have a lot of people opting out and not paying anything. So the system is not sustaining. And our Road User Fee Task Force, which includes a lot of different people, not just those of us who work at free market think tanks, actually concluded that is probably the best vision for the state of Oregon.
Representative Barnhart.
Well, another final thing, and I don't expect a response to this one. One of the difficulties that we have as we deal with that kind of an approach in general terms is the whole issue of how you deal with privacy. I think that my personal view is that we ought to be moving very much in that direction. I've thought for a long time that the approach to pollution, for example, where people were allowed to buy and sell pollution credits when caps are built correctly and the market is set up correctly is the right approach, because I think it does something very similar to what you're describing if it's set up correctly. And that's been around for a long time now. I also believe that this approach, which we've been exploring, as you know, in Oregon, would be a good one if we can solve the conundrum of how it is I can drive my vehicle where I want to. I can be charged according to the incentives that you've described, and I can do it in a way that Big Brother isn't allowed to follow me around. That's something we have to solve. I'm sure it is solvable. We just have to figure out how to get there with it. Because the most important objection that I've had from everybody who's objected to that approach has not been about the theory of this kind of charging, but about the invasion of their personal privacy in the process of collecting these fees.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Barnhart, that's exactly right. And the majority of tolls now collected on turnpikes in the country are collected electronically. E-ZPass systems are almost ubiquitous. And everywhere they deal with that. And it's essentially the issue has gone away. Most places offer what they jokingly refer to as a Swiss bank account version. You can apply and get a super private account. Or you can just have transponders be like the electronic things you get to go ride the Metro DC subway or BART. You buy them. You have deductions as you use it. If someone takes that from you, that doesn't tell them anything about you at all. Or a prepaid phone card that you buy. So has always been a key point since Oklahoma Turnpike 15 years ago became a pioneer in this field, and their turnpike has been door-to-door, wall-to-wall electronic since 1990. And then what they discovered after everyone starts using it, people become a lot more relaxed, and what they realize is, no, this thing is making my life so much better, and everything else just kind of fades away. But I certainly agree, that's a key point.
Thank you.
Yeah.
If nothing else, the line is shorter at the toll booth. Representative Drudge.
Exactly.
Thank you, Chairman. I have to tell you, I really like this guy. My theory with government is really, especially after some of the schooling that I have, is that we do create market failures, and we're very good at doing that. And by creating free market strategies, I think that that's a good way to go. And so, I kind of like this line of thinking. So, I'm going to have a tendency to go that way.
Tell him who the last person you agreed with in the audience is.
The last person I agreed
with? ACLU.
I'm not sure that's exactly true, but there was a time I'd actually agree.
Never mind.
Are there further questions or comments? Not seeing any. Mr. Charles, thank you very much for your testimony. I think you've brought up some very important points here. I think you've given us some things to think about. And I also believe that some of the points that you make about some of the things that the task force should be considering are on point. And I would think that I would expect that those would be things that the committee, or rather task force, should be considering. And if you would choose to add an amendment to that effect, we would certainly consider it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You're very gracious.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I appreciate it. And you generated a great deal of discussion. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Is there anyone else that would like to testify today on House Bill 2472? Not seeing any. I'm going to close the meeting on House Bill 2472, the public hearing. I'm not going to obviously move this bill today because we are awaiting amendments. I would like to briefly open a work session on House Joint Memorial Number 6. This is our Ice Age Floods National Geologic Trail. Representative Dahlem, what is your pleasure?
I would make a motion that we move House Joint Resolution Number 6 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Dahlem moves House Joint Memorial Number 6 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. On the motion, not seeing or hearing anything. Barry, would you please call the roll?
Representative Barnhart.
Excused.
Representative Dell?
Yes.
Representative Drudd?
Yes.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lim?
Excused.
Vice Chair Riley?
Aye.
Chair Witt?
Aye. House Joint Memorial Number 6, having received the majority vote,
is moved to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Representative Dahlem, would you be willing to carry this?
I would be delighted.
Thank you very much. Anything more to come before our committee? I'll close the work session on House Joint Memorial 6, and our committee is adjourned. Before I adjourn, Ellen, what are we doing on Friday?
Thank you, Chair Whitman. Members of the committee, on Friday, March 2nd, beginning at 8 a.m., we'll be hearing House Bill 2095, which allows the Housing Authority to own mixed-income housing projects, and we'll be having amendments that we'll be hearing on the bill at that time. We'll also be hearing House Bill 2540 for its first public hearing, which authorizes the Director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services to adopt a code for rehabilitation of commercial and multifamily residential structures that are located in a vintage downtown district.
Thank you very much, and with that, we stand adjourned.
Thank you, Chair Whitman.
Thank you very much. You're doing well.